simple task on today's show. When will the Suns get their players back? Will this be the year that the Suns win a title? And what happened with Jalen Smith's development? Lack thereof? We'll talk about all of it coming up on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, credentialed media member covering the Suns for Suns.com and the NBA for Dime Magazine. Thank you so much for making Locked On Suns your first listen each and every morning. I do the show every day, so it's nice when people listen every day. Thank you so much for doing that. You are already doing the best thing you can do, the number one way that you can support the show. You are already here, which means you are already doing that. You are watching, you are listening. So a big thank you for that as well. One bigger thing, one bigger request of you is if you found your way here and you do not already subscribe or follow us on whatever platform you are finding us on, that is a huge support. If you are on YouTube, hello, welcome. You can see my attempted beard growing face. I've seen some comments. We'll see how it comes in. I had a lot of time away from the office, so I felt like why not experiment with my ability or lack thereof to grow it in. We'll see what happens. But we are just a few subscribers away from 750, at which point this We Are the Valley towel from last year's playoffs could be yours. And I hope that it is yours because I would like to give it away. And I've been begging you for it for a long time, and we are almost there. So with that said, please subscribe. And of course, if you are on Apple or Spotify or any of the other services, please go ahead and subscribe there as well. Let's get into the show. A lot to get to, as I said. I want to dive back into the Jalen Smith stuff because I think it's what most people are talking about right now. I would also like to talk a little bit more about COVID and what the Suns are going through. And the bulk of the show will be spent on, is this the year that the Suns finally break through? We are in 2022 now. Somehow, against all odds, we made it. We got here. We are in another year. Let's hope this one continues on an upward trajectory. I think 2021 was better than 2020. Let's hope we get another better year in the books and that it will be topped off at some point this summer with a Suns title. So I'll get into that, the odds of that and everything else. But Jalen Smith, I sang his praises, it's fair to say, I think. I sang his praises on yesterday's show because I continue to feel like I watch these games. Smith executes just about everything that I feel like you could hope for from a player with as little experience in the NBA as he has. He does what he needs to do, and yet I feel like I go online afterward or I see the chatter or read articles, and it's like Smith's a bust and this and that, and I just, I don't understand it. So, talked about his advanced stats yesterday. I talked about the fact that he is a plus in estimated plus minus and box plus minus, both sides of the floor. Not just that he's, you know, piling up stats and everything else. He's executing what his role is and playing with energy on both ends. And the numbers are showing that that's turning into real value. But the obvious downside of that that we know is that Smith's not on a contract next season. And so I've seen some frustration about that among Suns fans as well. Both the fact that DeAndre Ayton is playing so well despite not having a contract, and that Jalen Smith is suffering the same fate, or I guess that maybe Suns fans watching are suffering the same fate while they're watching this breakout happen. So I think it's worth digging into where the breakdown happened here. And so I'm going to give you three reasons why Jalen Smith sort of didn't pan out. Although I'm not sure if you can say that he didn't pan out in the NBA. But he didn't pan out here, and he probably is not long for the Suns. So let's get into it. The number one thing that I think went wrong right off the bat with this guy is that I think the Suns got his position wrong. I think that when they, I mean, I don't think, when they drafted Jalen Smith, 10th overall, I remember it to this day. I was on the Locked On, the live NBA draft show that we did with Chad Ford and David Locke, our boss here at the network, and all ready to go. Had my prep done on Tyrese Haliburton, Devin Vassell, who are they going to do? And then they throw us all for a loop. James Jones with his signature, out of nowhere, roster move, and they take Jalen Smith. But that night they said that they basically saw him as a power forward. Now they didn't say that outright, but there was a lot of talk of playing next to DeAndre Ayton. Clearly, you know, the way that the roster was built felt like they thought of him more as, at the very least, like a 4-5 combo, not just a pure center, because they got Damian Jones. They obviously had Frank Kaminsky, who they brought back pretty early on in the season, and they had Dario Saric, of course, too, who was coming off of a pretty nice bubble run himself. So that's miss number one, because I don't think he's a four. He didn't really play the four in college. He was a rebounding, rim-protecting, floor-spacing center in college. And so there's really no evidence that he was going to be a four. He defensively, his hips and his lower body being as thin as they are and as weak sort of physically as they were, it didn't ever land with me the right way that he was somehow going to become a, you know, starting caliber power forward front court partner for DeAndre Ayton. So that's miss number one. Miss number two to me was not having the infrastructure in place. You know, not having a G League team, first and foremost. Yes, they sent him to the G League bubble, but you're not in control of the development of a player when you don't have your own affiliate. You're sending them out to another team where that coach has no incentive to develop that player. It's not to say that the playing time and the ability to be around another team and be around, you know, practices and coaching and getting better isn't valuable, but those coaches have an incentive to make their affiliate team, their NBA affiliate, those guys improve. There's no reason that the Agua Caliente Clippers, where Jalen Smith spent the G League bubble playing with, they don't need to make him better. I mean, there's no need to focus on his development and his growth. So that's a mistake. And if you are going to be a competitive team, which the Suns obviously have tried and succeeded in being, then you can't just get by letting guys hang out at the end of the bench. You know, the Raptors are probably the best example with the way that they turned that Raptors G League team with Jerry Stackhouse coaching it, and you've seen it reaped dividends out of it. Chris Boucher and I believe even like Fred VanVleet and other guys went through that program and they really succeeded as a result of it. So not having that and not having the minutes for him in the NBA meant that Smith just sort of ended up on the bench for most of last season, and heading into this season, his fate was the same until injuries and COVID and everything changed things. The last one is not giving him the contract for his third season, declining his third-year option. It didn't make any sense at the time. I criticized it on this show with Brandon, with Zona, back when he was still doing shows every week, and neither one of us could understand it because, yes, there's this idea of like the sunk cost. If you feel like this player is not going to be a part of your future plans, there's no reason necessarily to keep him around. However, I don't think that the Suns knew enough to say that he wasn't part of their future plans or that he wasn't going to be good enough to cut it in the NBA because they just had not seen enough from him. And number two within that is I don't feel like there's actually a benefit to getting rid of a player, even if you have some hesitancy about his development, unless you're going to do something with that roster spot. So it's not to say that obviously the ability to bring in, you know, next year, the 2022 version of JaVale McGee, whoever that might be for the Suns, has its value, of course. But young players developing has its value as well, and I can't help but think that the difference between whatever they were going to have to pay Jalen Smith and whatever a minimum player might cost, which is going to be less, had a role in that decision. The ability to save some money there probably had something to do with it. Yes, Jalen Smith is probably an NBA player next year, whether he's on the Suns or not, and I lean toward he will not be. But he would have been, if they had given him that option year, he would have been more expensive because he would have been making $3, $4 million as opposed to the $2 million or so that a minimum player will make. And I can't help but feel like that played a role, and it was a big mistake because now they're losing out on the ability to continue to see what they have in Smith. Now, it's not to say that they couldn't pull a rabbit out of the hat and still keep him. I don't expect that, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And maybe he's played himself into at least getting some minutes here and there in the rest of the season up until the trade deadline, and he's shown enough that I think teams will have interest in him, so they could still salvage the whole thing by getting him in a place where he can continue to grow and maybe getting a more veteran player who they trust more to help them for their title run. So all is not lost with Jalen Smith. We can continue to enjoy him playing, but I do think that there were just some misses along the way, and it is disappointing because while I don't think he's a perfect player, while I don't think he maybe was worth the 10th overall pick, and that put him in a tricky spot in the NBA, I definitely don't think he's bad or that he should have just been given up on after all of that. So dicey stuff, hard to say, but we'll see how long he has that ability left in him to contribute for the Suns, because they might be getting some guys back from COVID in the near future. We'll talk about what's next, but first, another dive into what it's like to be forgotten about, and that is what free trials do to you in your inbox, and that is what Truebill is trying to fix. Those free trials, renewing without your consent, against your will, is a business scam. That's pretty obvious. Greedy corporations pocketing your money and trying to nickel and dime you. Well, don't let that happen. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or maybe just forgot about. Companies love to make it hard to cancel. They don't give you an easy link on an email. They don't remind you that the payment is going through. They just sit there and collect those checks. But Truebill tries to make it incredibly simple. Your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. They monitor the ones you're getting. They remind you of the payments that you might have forgotten you are making. And they check in with you to make sure they're saving you a ton of money. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Get it right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA could save you thousands per year. That's Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. John Gambadoro of 98.7 Arizona Sports Station today was, actually yesterday, now that I'm realizing it, going into the Hornets game, gave us a little bit of an update as to what Suns fans can expect from players who are out. Gambo said he does not expect anybody to be back prior to the Thursday night TNT game against the Los Angeles Clippers. That would be the soonest, not to say that they will be back then, but what that means is this Hornets game, or wow, I went back a decade. This Pelicans game, rather, is maybe the last one without some of these Suns players who have been out in health and safety protocol. Now, unfortunately, we know that that doesn't necessarily mean that others might not go in between now and then, but as things stand, that could be the case. It sounds like it's more so a matter of working everybody back into full strength. So that's good news. It seems like they probably, that Crowder and Ayton were symptomatic, which is a bummer, of course, but they seem to also be on their way back. The NBA also changed its rules, so that's worth considering here. Players can be cleared from protocols after 7 days. I'm reading this courtesy of Adrian Wojnarowski and Baxter Holmes. If their cycle threshold, I'm trying my best here. If their cycle threshold levels were above 35, previously that was the rule. Now, players can return after 5 days if their CT levels are above 30, according to league sources. that is equated with how infectious a player is. So you might have heard about this with the MESA tests from the NFL, and it's similar. It's basically measuring how much of the virus are you giving off and what's the risk of you being out there. So maybe you still have a little bit of a cough, you still have a headache, but you're not really infectious, you're not really contagious, and it's not a risk for you to be out on the court with your teammates anymore. And so that's where they're going. So 5 days has already been blown by Crowder and Ayton. So Crowder went into protocols on the 26th of December, that Sunday. So of course it's been over a week for him. And DeAndre Ayton went in on the 27th, as did Monty Williams. So what that says to me is those guys probably did actually have symptoms, which is, again, sad. I mean, like, that just sucks. But they also seem to have still, they're still testing at a high enough level of those, that CT level, that they're not able to be cleared. So maybe, and that's the latest that I have. The Suns have sent out their initial injury report for tomorrow. Those guys are both still on it, as is Abdul Nader and JaVale McGee, but those guys obviously are on a little bit of a delay. So really, we're just waiting for the 5-day mark for everybody and hoping that they can clear that, that they can get back into the level of conditioning that they obviously will want to get to, and that nothing gets too bad. That's basically where we are. Sounds like it won't be any sooner than Thursday, but it might be Thursday that the Suns are able to get some guys back. It would be much, much appreciated. And they can get back into a little bit of a groove and start to learn things about themselves once and for all before the trade deadline, when they really have to start to make some decisions about Jalen Smith, who we talked about Bismack Biyombo, who we talked about, what type of player they want to target. Are they going to use that mid-level exception? All of that stuff in the coming days will be on James Jones's mind, starting with getting these guys healthy. So that's where that is. Let's get to the big question of the day. Is 2022 going to be the year that the Suns win the NBA title? We'll get to all of that in just 1 second. Back here, closing out the show with the big question of the day. Will this be the year that the Suns win the NBA title? We're almost at 55 years of the Suns being a franchise, being in existence. I believe this might actually be the 55th season that the Suns have existed. So I guess if you're into those round numbers, that is a nice framing here. But of course, the really big reason, the reason is every year you want to be that team, but we're all coming off of a little bit of sour taste in our mouths, having watched how that final series ended, and it obviously did not go the Suns' way. It was obviously very disappointing for all of us who were hoping for the best for these guys. So with all of that said, I'm curious to hear what you guys think, but I'm also looking up the odds here as well, because something tells me that the Suns are still not where we want them to be. However, they have to be clearly near the top. So the most up-to-date that I can find, the Suns are second highest odds in the Western Conference. Finally, the Nets plus 250, the Warriors plus 450, the Bucks plus 700, and the Suns plus 800. That feels fair to me. I think that the Warriors have proven, yes, you can always claim injury and all this stuff, but I think you at some point just have to listen to the games, and the Warriors have won 2 of 3. They've looked very good in the process, and I think you just have to defer to that at a certain point. As for the East, I think it's just better to bet the East because you just have an easier path. When you listen to people talk around the league on, in the media and everything else, most people will pick an Eastern Conference team to be their favorite because the path is just easier as things currently stand. The West probably has the three best teams in the league so far, in the Suns, the Jazz, and the Warriors. So that's a tough thing for the Suns, and that's where I think it has to start. Now, let's go round by round. I don't know who they'll play, of course, but I want to pick back up on what I said in yesterday's show about the Lakers and how bizarre, I think it was yesterday's show, how bizarre that was, how fluky it was that the Suns were facing the defending champions who were suddenly healthy again in the first round of the playoffs. That is so rare. And honestly, the other option could have been the Warriors. Like, it was such a strange, strange season because of COVID, because of injuries and everything else. So that just is unlikely to happen. Now, obviously, if you look at the standings right now, the Lakers are still in that seven seed. And if they were to win the play-in tournament, then they would be in position once again for that 2-7 matchup with the Suns. But I think you have to take into consideration the fact that the Lakers just are not the Lakers right now. If their roster looks anything like it does currently, by the time the playoffs roll around, that will not be as scary of a team. You will not see as many people picking the Lakers because their defense is not what it used to be. Their size is not what it used to be. Their shooting is not what it used to be. They basically traded all of that in for Russell Westbrook, and he has just not elevated their team. So that would not be a very frightening thing to face if you're the Suns by that time. The other options are the Mavericks, who the Suns have always played well against since Luka was drafted. That matchup shouldn't scare anybody. The Timberwolves, the Kings, the Spurs, these are the other teams in the running. The Blazers are down at 12, which is pretty disappointing for Blazers fans. The second round would be pretty similar, in my opinion. You would have a lot of question marks, you know. Right now, the Suns would be facing either the Jazz or the Clippers. I think that they match up pretty well against the Jazz. I think that the Clippers have a lot of question marks. Paul George is out for an extended period. We still don't know if Kawhi Leonard will play, so that particular matchup doesn't really frighten me that much either if I'm a Suns fan. So the bottom line is the Western Conference will be a lot easier. Now, the Jazz in the second round, of course, is a lot different than the Nuggets in the second round. The Suns should be prioritizing getting that one seed at as much as they possibly can this year, because I think having home court advantage against the Warriors will be extremely important, and not having to have that second round matchup against the Jazz will be pretty big as well. You're not going to get lucky again. As terrifying as that first round matchup was last year for the Suns, having to go up against the defending champion Lakers and all the history and rivalry that went into that and all the pressure they were facing, they got very lucky in the second round. They faced the most depleted team left in the playoffs at that point in the Denver Nuggets. And that's unlikely to happen again. It's just almost impossible to be as injured and bereft of talent as those Nuggets were. Yes, the Suns demolished them, but, you know, they had every excuse in the world to be as little competition in that series as they did. So you're probably going to get an easier opponent in the first round, but probably a harder opponent in the second round if you are the Suns this year. And you want to have that one seed as much as you possibly can. Which brings us to the Golden State Warriors. They are better than the Suns right now. And I actually think the Warriors are a pretty interesting team. I've talked a bunch about how the defense is what scares me most in this Warriors team. The fact that they have Draymond Green and so many athletic, versatile wings, scoring against them is going to be the biggest challenge in a playoff series. Far more. Like, Steph Curry is a complete enigma as far as guarding him goes. It's nearly impossible to keep him completely quiet for seven games. But the defense is what's the biggest problem. So the Suns just, it's a bad matchup for them. I mean, I think that you can't really avoid that, because in a lot of ways, I think that they're somewhat similarly constructed to the Bucks, where the Bucks had a versatile, dominant defense. That is what led the way in the finals. And their offense was, you know, let's let Giannis cook. And as long as enough other guys make shots and step up when they need to and take care of the ball and all those things, play smart, then we can win this series. And that's exactly what happened. Drew Holiday, Giannis, Brook Lopez, their defense was able to really make a difference, and Giannis did enough to outscore the Suns. that would be kind of what you're facing in the Warriors. So we'll see if the Suns can make additions between now and then to have a little bit more scoring and be more ready for that matchup. Maybe it's Dario Saric getting healthier. Maybe it's a trade or Thaddeus Young. I kind of doubt that's the difference, but they have the opportunity. They have a roster spot. They have the money. They have some trade chips. They can do it if they'd like to, but we don't know that yet. So as things stand now, that matchup seems pretty hard. On the other hand, though, I do think that there's a legitimate case to be made that the Warriors do have some things to figure out. Like, the questions about what Klay will look like in and of itself is interesting. What will a guy with a torn ACL followed by a torn, a ruptured Achilles tendon, what will he look like? I mean, that in and of itself is a big question, and there's reason to be pessimistic about that. But I also think the ripple effects of what happens to their rotation is really interesting as well. Not only with Klay coming back, but with James Wiseman eventually going to return, Andre Iguodala, who's sort of been in and out of the lineup, but you would think would be part of their playoff rotation to start things off in the postseason. Those guys returning and playing in the playoffs will make some other guys not play, and their depth is part of what makes them special, and they have such a clear-cut rotation right now that if you are suddenly, you know, what happens if you take Gary Payton Jr. out here and there, or you disrupt things by, you know, not having the big man playmaking with Bielitsa or Toscano Anderson? There is going to be a growing pain part of the season for the Warriors once they start to get players back and integrate those players and figure out the best rotation and the best style with everybody healthy. So maybe that allows the Suns to get into the one seed. Maybe that disrupts the Warriors' flow a little bit, and they maybe aren't so scary by March the next time they play in the regular season, or by, you know, a potential third-round matchup in May or so. So I think the Warriors are the biggest foe right now. I think the Bucks are obviously still a problem. I think the Nets are scary in their own way, especially who knows what's going to happen with Kyrie. That has to do with local politics in New York City and with his level of engagement and with which games are home and which games are on the road, frankly. But those teams obviously deserve to be up there in the betting odds and everything else. The Bucks and the Nets are both teams that nobody would want to face. So the Suns have an uphill battle, but I think the idea that last year was sort of their one chance and they blew it and it's over and, you know, the sky is falling, it's over, done. They don't ever have another shot with this core to win a title. That was overblown. It never made sense in the moment. You obviously want to seize the opportunities when you have them because you never know when you'll be back. The 93 Suns were never back. The 76 Suns were never back. The 7 seconds or less teams never even made it there because of all these different fluky and challenging things that faced them along the way. So you want to seize the 2020 title, but what's done is done. It's in the past. It's over. It's not going to be changed. And I think they have where they stand now, I feel just as good, if not a little bit better, than I did heading into the playoffs last year. Because there's still only two or three teams that really freak me out if I'm the Suns. And I think their playoff path is about the same, if not maybe a little bit easier, than it was last year. I mean, they got a little bit lucky with being able to sweep the Nuggets. But you were looking at, if they hadn't been able to do that, you know, potentially three long series back to back to back in the West Finals before they even could think about the NBA Finals. And this year, I think you'll have a first-round opponent that you could probably take care of fairly easy. You'll be expecting to take care of business in that series. And if the chips fall right, you might not really, really be pushed until the Warriors. And that's a breath of fresh air. So I'm not giving a prediction as much as the title of the episode and this entire segment was getting toward that. We're way too early. We're way too early to make any sort of thing, proper prediction and declaration on that front, but they have a chance. You know, we're getting again toward the 55 years. We're hoping that they can avenge what happened last year and get another shot at it, because we all root for that. And just, you don't like to see the one-offs. You don't like to see teams never have another shot at it, and I think the Suns will. So that's what I believe 2022 will bring us. It's going to be a blast every step of the way. I'm glad you guys are here with me making Locked On Suns your first listen. Now, go make Locked On Now your second listen on YouTube. It's a great show. We do it every night, recapping the action around the NBA. So go subscribe there on YouTube. Check it out, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow.